My buddy Aaron Barnhart, who's a weekly contributor to this show, emailed me a couple of days ago and said, Paul, I just had a great conversation with Dan Verbeck. Dan is a reporter for KMBZ Radio in Kansas City, where Aaron is headquartered, and works for Entercom there, and went down to New Orleans, where Entercom has a radio station that is kind of the KMOX of New Orleans. It's WWL. It's the big news talk information source of New Orleans, and was really the only place that a lot of people could turn to during the disaster there. When you don't have electricity, you know, you go to the old battery-powered radio, and that's how a lot of people were staying informed as to what was going on. So after Aaron told me a little bit about what he had talked to Dan about, I said, well, I want to talk to him on the air. And so here he is. I think he's back in Kansas City. Is that where you are now, Dan?
Yes, I am, Paul, and I have to say you have amazing recuperative powers. Your voice sounds fine.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that very much. So you were down there for several days last week, and you were there with your sister station, WWL. Under what circumstances? Because I heard that they were barely keeping things together with spit and polish.
Good engineers can do a lot. And you know, I've always thought that radio engineers, maybe engineers in general, like to keep things working because things are supposed to work.
Yep.
In this case, we had an engineer with us out in a bunker out in the field about 2 miles from their transmitter, and there was problems going with the generator. There are alligators normally around the base of their tower, and for some reason the alligators like the building. They've broken into it a number of times in the past. So with water knee and waist deep, this man named Dominic waded about three-quarters of a mile at night out to the transmitter to make sure that it would work.
When did you go down there, Dan?
I went down there late Saturday night.
Before the storm hit.
Right. Got there the day before, and I got to see some of the preparation. Got to travel with some police out in the neighborhoods that eventually flooded. It was just by happenstance that they wound up going through that area. At one point, there was a minor riot in a neighborhood grocery where they had raised the prices unconscionably on water and ice and some food items. And for people who didn't have a car, this was the only place to shop. It was very ugly for a while. Police talked it down into quiet. And I wondered, in retrospect, Paul, if those kinds of things didn't plant some kind of a seed that led to looting later. I'm going to get them. They're gouging us. We'll get them back someday.
That gouging was going on before the storm even hit?
It was going on at noon on Sunday, and the storm, the eye went over at, 6 o'clock Monday morning.
Wow. What was the mood of people before the storm hit? Because I know New Orleans has had many, many warnings in the past. They've never had one that got to Category 4, but they've had plenty of Category 1, 2, and 3 hurricanes there. Was there a feeling among some of the people there of the boy who cried wolf?
There was some of that, certainly. But by late Sunday afternoon, some of the highways out of town that I had to cross had cars that were lined up. They looked like I-70, your downtown, if you could picture that at a standstill. Some car ran out of gas up ahead. There was a wreck of some kind, and everything just stopped. And there were people outside their cars shaking their fists at the sky, banging on the hoods, and they knew that if they didn't get moving, you know, they might die. It was that serious. And there were others who blithely went about boarding up their houses as the police went past with the loudspeakers on, saying Category 5 hurricane is coming, evacuate, mandatory evacuation, get to higher ground, New Orleans ordered to evacuate. And people would wave at the police officer and continue screwing on plywood. So there was certainly some of that. This is my home. I've worked all my life for it. I'm not leaving it.
How were you able to get around in the midst of all of that?
I had a car, and I was told what side streets to take by the local newsmen. And then Sunday night, they did me a great favor by taking me away from their studios downtown, which were right next to the Superdome, and studios which were later blasted out by the wind, and the glass was in one of those all-glass tall buildings. It knocked out interior walls and doors around the studios, but they stayed on the air and shared with two other newsmen, and I and an engineer went out to an emergency operations center that was built in a concrete four-story windowless building. And we had a small studio. We were able to transmit from there. So back and forth we went until finally downtown studios went down completely.
Were you doing reports just for KMBZ, or were you also on the air with your colleagues from WWL?
I was primarily there, Paul, to help WWL. And at one point there were three newsmen sharing pretty much a 24-hour day of on the air. I would call back every morning for a brief period of time and call back some accounts to my home station here in Kansas City.
What was it like being on the air after the flood began? Because the levees started breaking down on Monday night, and by Tuesday morning, the whole town was wet, and that's really when the story for New Orleans started. Of course, the rest of the Gulf Coast took their biggest hits on Monday, but it was Tuesday when things really got bad in New Orleans. What were you doing on the air at WWL?
But you're absolutely right, Paul. After the main force of the hurricane went past and realized that there wasn't the storm surge and the city had been damaged but spared the major flooding, there was this palpable sense of relief. You know, we missed it. And then this, in the course of assessment, this levee breaches, and for some reason they can't plug it up, and it starts to fill up the town. And things then got very, very tense. There was a point when the emergency operations center, which had a motor pool, served probably half of the metro area of New Orleans, ran low on fuel. I was told that they had a cooperative agreement put up that structure with FEMA, FEMA would provide the fuel. They began to run low on fuel, and the parish council president said that FEMA would not release the fuel for whatever reason. And gradually, I could see the sheriff's cars stopping, no gas. The National Guard trucks stopping. The ambulances quit running. The fire trucks quit running for hours. I don't know how long it took before that fuel came in. It was the same thing with water. FEMA said that water had arrived on a particular morning, probably I think it was Wednesday morning, at 2 o'clock in the morning at Baton Rouge, an hour north. Two Walmart trucks arrived with bottled water. They were turned away. FEMA turned them back, said, we have a supply, we don't need you. By noon that day, the water had not arrived. By 6 o'clock that night, it had not arrived, an hour away. It's a little hard to talk about it without being a little emotional, but I do my best.
I completely understand that, particularly since you were in the middle of it. FEMA turning away desperately needed supplies for people who were, I mean, to talk about the word desperation, we certainly saw that over the next couple of days. Was that all on FEMA, or was some of that on the parish and city and state?
The parish council president said that the fuel supply was controlled by FEMA. They had a contractual arrangement that the fuel would be delivered, but maybe it didn't meet something that was in the manual that said X number of hours. I don't know. X number of hours must pass, or certain conditions must be met before the fuel is released, before we allow private companies to come in and deliver supplies. Whatever it was, it didn't work.
Mm. Talk to me a little bit about being on the air during the storm and the reaction that you were getting, because I know the WWL was taking lots and lots of phone calls from people, and it was not typical. You know, I like to say my show is not typical talk radio, but what you guys were doing last week was above and beyond anything typical that's done on a regular basis in radio, wasn't it?
I don't think too often anyone will get a call at 3 or 4 in the morning from a woman who gives her address, and the news director is with me, and he knows the location, and the woman says, I'm in water in my house up to my chest. We ask, is anyone else with you? Yes, I have three babies. One of them is running a fever. Can you save our lives? Can you, with great dignity, can you save our lives? She asks. And what can we say except, can you get out a window? Can you get to the roof? There are a couple of men in the house with you. Can they pass the babies up to you? Do you have any water? No, don't have any water. The northern sun is about to come up in a couple of hours, very hot on a roof. Don't have any water. Do you have any fluids? I have some milk. Oh, no, I gave the milk to the baby with the fever last night. Well, if you can get to the roof, take a bed sheet and wave it at any sound you hear. At this point, if she ever made it, Paul, she may have been one of 1,000 people up on roofs at that time, and I can only guess that she probably perished.
Can you save our lives?
Can you save our lives? I carry that around, carry that with me. And I know that Dave Cohen, the news director there, carries that too.
Just one of many phone calls like that you must have gotten from people
there
trapped.
Yes, there were some, but some were more desperate than others. That was one of them.
Why hadn't she left? Do you know?
I don't know. At that point, asking it would have just been academic.
Yeah. When you rounded up stories from some of the people who were still there and some of those who had gotten out, were there any that actually made you say, whew, that was a good one, as opposed to a bad one?
I would have to think about it a little bit. There was a man who was a technician in this command center where we were, and he had come there in just the right amount of time, and he was then assigned to certain tasks, and he lived in the bunker with the rest of us. And, Paul, the 2 nights after I came back to Missouri, my phone rang. Now, the phones didn't get out from down there very well. About every 30th try on a cell phone would make it through, and it was this man. A real old tough bird, an old South Louisianian who'd been through hurricanes all his life. And I said, how are things down there? And he said, well, we can flush the toilets now. Up to that point, everybody got a plastic bag when elimination was a problem, and you got rid of it as best you could. And he said, the toilets are flushing. And he says, I have a pillow, and I got some fresh socks. And then he started to cry on the phone. He got out though. He didn't know about his house, and he didn't really know for certain about his wife.
After the flood, in between the times that you had to be on the radio, did you get out to see conditions yourself firsthand?
Immediately after the winds went through on Monday, I got out and witnessed a little confrontation between a sheriff's deputy, and it was a street with all the power lines down, trees down, the fronts ripped off an apartment building, and then there was a couple out in their front yard coiling up a downed line. I went over to talk to them, and it was apparent then that it was a telephone line and it wasn't charged. The sheriff's deputy came up and started to shout at them, "What are you doing? That could kill you." And they started to shout back, "You have no reason to raise your voice at us, officers." And he raised his voice more, and then he told them it was martial law and he could come over and arrest them. But there were looters 3 blocks away, and he didn't have time to do that. And he just wanted them to be safe. But they stuck it out in, of all things, a double-wide mobile home. And it made it through that wind of 130, 140 miles an hour, Paul. I can't quite understand it.
But normally, those are the first thing the wind goes for.
Yeah, it was strange. There were the oddities.
Tell me about the looting and the danger. Whenever I hear stories, I always listen with a kind of skeptical ear to them because I know how quickly rumors can spread. What do you know factually was going on there?
I didn't witness looting myself, Paul, so I don't want to speak to it. All I know was what I saw on a couple of the television stations that were still operating at the time. And I always keep in mind that when you see something going on, the narrowness of the lens may make it appear to be bigger than it is. But there were certainly people looting and taking things out of buildings, but I didn't see it myself.
You and I both know, being in the media, how those of us in the media react to these things when we're not on the air. We're talking to each other about all sorts of stuff, about what we think about what's going on, what we've seen, what we've done. Here you were hanging out with a bunch of radio people for several days in the midst of the worst natural crisis this country has ever seen. What was the mood among your colleagues and their attitude towards the authority figures at every level of government?
The understanding was in this basement makeshift kind of broadcast center where we were located was that we were the kind of station that back in the 50s, if there was a nuclear attack, all stations would be simulcast on that one. We knew that there was some responsibility that we had. Basically, everybody worked a 23, 24-hour day. Some people didn't sleep at all. It was understood that any public official could come in to where we were and put out any announcement to the people that he or she wanted to make. And there was a steady stream of people who came through and wanted to let people know about when people could come back, certain hazards that were in the area, what the status of utilities were, putting out pleas for people with boats to arrive at certain points that could be used in rescue work, putting out pleas for water, medical supplies.
One of the more famous broadcasts on WWL last week was Mayor Ray Nagin getting on the air and blasting the feds for not coming in and helping. Was that exhaustion plus anger plus frustration?
He was in the studios downtown when they were still operating. I was out in the field. I wasn't there when he did that. I don't know what happens to the body when the adrenaline begins to fade, or when the adrenaline, well, I know what happens when it begins to surge. I don't know what was in his head when he made his statements, but some of it, I'm sure, was heartfelt, and certainly there are segments in our society of various political leanings that snapped up on it and vilified him. I don't know if he should have been or not.
Yeah, to me, the worst part of the last week and a half has been the politics from every conceivable angle. You got there the Saturday before the storm. When did you leave?
I drove out of, I got to Baton Rouge, and I drove to Memphis on Thursday night, and then drove to Kansas City. I couldn't return my rental car. It was due in at the New Orleans airport, which was there was no power and there was damage. So I drove a rental car that was supposed to be returned in New Orleans up here, and Avis was kind enough to waive the additional fees.
Well, that's very nice of them. Will you be going back to do further reporting from New Orleans?
I haven't been asked, and I don't know if I will. Well, if they ask me to, I will.
I would guess that the images and the sounds will linger forever, particularly that one woman, "Can You Save Our Lives?"
I haven't been able to sleep very well, Paul, and I know in time I will. I've been a reporter for 40 years, and I've covered a lot of events, many of them tragic, but nothing holds a candle to this.
Dan, thanks for sharing part of the story with me today.
Good to be with you, Paul.
Dan Verbeck, who is a reporter and a damn good one from KMBZ in Kansas City, spending several days in the hell that was New Orleans in the midst of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.